7:30 in the light. I get those goosebumps every time, yeah. You come around, yeah. You ease my mind, you make everything feel fine. Worry about those comments, I'm way too numb, yeah. It's way too dumb, yeah. I get those goosebumps every time.
And here we go. Live from the White Claw Hard Seltzer Studios. It's overtime on a Tuesday. We appreciate you listening along with us. William Pattison, Dawson Wise, Jace Brown in here for you. 865-546-8200, your number if you want to hop in and join. A lot to cover in this hour after a great first hour. Let's continue it. We'll talk about March Madness possibly expanding. Broncos country's last ride as Russell Wilson has now been set off into the abyss, moving on from him. And we'll also talk about Saquon Barkley not being franchise tagged by the New York Giants. What does that mean for him and his future and the Giants' future heading forward? But first, let's head to the phones. 865-546-8200. We've got Joshy Boy on the line. What's up, Joshy?
How are you guys doing tonight?
Doing well. How are you?
Good. William, this Tennessee baseball team is looking really good tonight after K-State took the lead 2-0. The Vols responded with a non-straight run.
Yeah, we're checking up on it here at the break. Dean Curley, CMO getting involved offensively, and Vols have a pretty comfortable lead now. Nice opportunity at playing Kansas State, and the Vols look like they're making the most of it.
Yeah. So, is it too early? You can take this as a joke, which it clearly is, but is it too early to crown the Vols as national champion?
In college baseball?
Baseball?
Yeah. If you want to crown them, crown them.
I don't. It might be a little too early to crown them, but
I'm joking.
No, I know. You're good.
Yeah.
But you know, with the way they've been playing, this is the start of a champion. And Dean Curley Fry with a big hit. That's a nice way to get it going as well. So
yeah.
So far so good. I like what I've seen from this team overall this season. Now I think this weekend you'll learn a little bit more about this team taking on Illinois, which is a nice opponent, and then diving into SEC play, I think you'll really learn a lot about this team.
Oh yeah, the only thing I'm really worried about is that third starter. I hope by midway through SEC we can solidify that spot.
Joshy, who would you like to see?
I really wouldn't mind seeing Snead.
Yeah, you know, we had this conversation yesterday. Do you put Causey in there? Do you give Snead a shot? Do you ride with Sechrist? You know, it's kind of been the looming question of the season. My argument yesterday is both these guys said Causey to be the Sunday starter. My thing was, yeah, I really like what you have in A.J. Russell and A.J. Causey following up each other on Friday. I think that gives you a really nice start to the weekend. Doesn't necessarily confirm a win, but throwing those two guys to start your weekend is a pretty tough matchup for any team in any offense. So I do like that. However, the rebuttal to that was, okay, if you move Causey to be the day three starter and move maybe Nate Snead over to fill his shoes, Causey's shoes, on Friday following up A.J. Russell, I could like that matchup as well. I think there are a couple other guys like a Matthew Dallas who maybe might have gotten thrown off on Sunday with the way Vitello was kind of interchanging the pitchers. You know, Sechrist also I think deserves a nod at least, an opportunity. We'll see what they do this weekend and tomorrow against Southern Indiana. But really right now I think has been your tinkering time, your time to kind of see what works and what doesn't. And I think this weekend, whoever is that Sunday starter very well could be the starter going forward.
Yeah, I agree with that. But, William, whenever they do get to the SEC tournament and if this Vols team makes the College World Series, you have plenty of options to choose from because Tennessee plays like in a double elimination situation in the SEC tournament, or Omaha, you could throw out Sechrist, Snead,
yeah,
or even Kirby, you know?
Yeah, I think you've got a lot of guys at your disposal. And I think that's what makes this. Yeah.
Yeah.
And I think that's what makes this team really deep on both the offense and defense, and in particular pitching. So I think this is probably one of the deepest teams, would you say, probably Tennessee has had? Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Oh, yeah.
And I think that's a really good thing, especially come tournament time and in College World Series time, because, you know, in those double elimination situations, you're able to kind of play it a little bit easier of who you're going to go out there and roll with. So I think depth is a really good thing, and it's one of the big bonuses of this Tennessee squad.
Yeah. So what do you think? What do you guys think about the Vols being a 4.5-point favorite against South Carolina tomorrow?
I think it's pretty fair. Yeah. I think Tennessee should be given the credit where credit is due for what they've done over the last couple of months. Mm-hmm. And really ever since that loss to South Carolina, I think Tennessee's continued to get better both on the road and against teams at home. I think South Carolina's a very good team. They've overachieved. Lamont Paris deserves a lot of credit for what he's done with that group. But I think Tennessee is the better team all the way around, and I'd expect a better performance than what you got out of the Vols when they played at home against this Gamecocks team a couple, I guess about a month and a half ago.
Yeah. So if Tennessee goes 1-for-1 this week, would that still put them at consideration for that last one seed?
I think when you're on the bubble of anything, you know, and whether it be to make the tournament or to get a one seed or you know, whatever the seed may be, I think you have to put your best foot forward, and I think your best foot forward would be winning both games. I think that takes a little bit of the question out of it. That gives you the opportunity to present the committee with your best, you know, best reason to be the number one seed. And I think if they're able to do that this week, I think they will be the number one seed. I think if you drop either of these, then it makes it a tough argument now, because especially with how close it is to the selection Sunday, I think you've got to go in with as many wins as you can.
William, I don't know if you watched any of that game last night between the Lakers and OKC. What did you think about that win for my Lakers last night?
Yeah, man. A big win for the Lakers. I think, you know, the matchup with Denver and OKC were going to be kind of a playoff simulation kind of games. Lakers are a team on, you know, we talk about the bubble in college basketball. The Lakers are a team on the bubble in terms of the playoffs. Big win for them last night. D'Angelo Russell was a really big story. I think that's a huge win for the Lakers. Now, the funny thing is, Giannis Antetokounmpo has been ruled out against the Clippers, but is aiming to come back the next game. Next game just so happens to be against the Lakers. They get the benefit of the doubt against, I guess, everyone. They always rest against the Clippers, but when they play the Lakers, well, yeah, I'm feeling better now.
I'm going to play, yeah.
Yeah, so, but yeah, good win. Lakers need to continue to stack these up. And, you know, every win they get in the Western Conference, especially against the top-tier ones, I think is a big deal. I think if the Lakers were to play the Thunder in a playoff series, I think it'd go very similar to how it did last night. I think the Lakers are the better team, more experienced team. Thunder would probably get a win or two, but the Lakers are the better team. And usually these younger teams like the Thunder, like the Timberwolves, who are front-led by a guy named Anthony Edwards, who's a younger guy. These guys play really hard during the regular season. You know, think of the Grizzlies, a younger team that front-led all of last year. Come playoff time, it's when the veterans come in and start playing their hardest as well. I think the Lakers' biggest thing is getting over the regular season hump, get them into the playoffs in any capacity. I think they're just fine.
Yeah, guys, out the door, I have one last question. So this Oklahoma City team and Denver come playoff time, when you buy low on them or sell high? Personally, I don't see the Nuggets going back-to-back championships this year. I just think they have some flaws. I think it's going to be the Celtics or Bucks this year. Y'all have a good night.
You as well, Joshy. Thank you so much for calling in. For the Thunder, I'd sell. I think they're a very cool story. They're a very young team. Chet Holmgren's been great. Shai Gilgeous-Alexander's been great. They've got a good club, and that's a club that you want to keep an eye on for the next couple of years. I think they're ahead of schedule. But that's not a team that wins in the playoffs right now, and I think you saw a little bit of a sliver of that last night against the Lakers. Now, the Nuggets, my biggest thing for them is I don't see a team outside of the Celtics. I think the Celtics could beat them in a series. But in the Western Conference, I think the closest team that matches up with the Nuggets are the Lakers, and that's only if they're fully healthy. I don't know if there's a team in the Western Conference that can beat the Nuggets. The pick and roll of Jokic and Jamal Murray has yet to be solved, mm-hmm. and I think until a team is able to solve that, I don't see them getting beat. I really don't. Now, the Celtics, I think, have the personnel to make the Nuggets play a certain way. Having Kristaps Porzingis now out there, that allows them to spread the floor. They could go five out with Porzingis and Horford in the corners or on the perimeter. Now you're bringing out Jokic of the paint and making him defend, very similar how Fairley Dickinson was able to beat Purdue last year. Mm-hmm. Fairley Dickinson was undersized, but they played five out and made Edie come out of the paint, and he had to defend him. Paint's wide open. So I think the Celtics have the best shot to beat the Nuggets, but I'd still say they're the favorite. I don't see a team right now. I have yet to see a team defend the pick and roll with Jokic and Murray. What do you guys have to say?
I would naturally agree, and that includes being a fan of a Western Conference team. I mean, I don't think anybody, including the Phoenix Suns, match up well with the Nuggets. I mean, heck, the Phoenix Suns didn't match up with them well last year, so there's nothing different this year that tells me that even they can match up well. It's probably fair. It's just going to be up to the Nuggets to execute and get back, and we'll see if they can do that.
Yeah, the one team in the West that I do have the most stock in for this one is definitely the Nuggets. Now, again, my Lakers are finally figuring themselves out. They're starting to win some ball games. They had a big one last night against the Thunder, but a young Thunder team at that. And when you've got guys like D'Lo starting to pop off, and of course you're getting steady play from LeBron every night in and out, you're going to do just fine. But Denver's still the team to beat in the West. Now, in the East, there's a couple teams that I could see, whether that be the Bucks or the Celtics, that could cause some problems for them. But like you said, that pick and roll with Murray and Jokic, nobody's been able to crack that code just yet.
Yeah. All right, let's move over to college basketball, or back to it, I should say. And some interesting news has come out with less than 2 weeks to go before Selection Sunday and the release of the men's NCAA tournament bracket. College basketball insiders are preparing for an expanded field in the very near future. Exactly what that look like, or what that looks like, needs to be carved out in the various committee meetings. But there's less likelihood that the tournament will swell much beyond the current 68 teams. Quote, "We're not talking about 96," said a college administrator who was briefed on the conversations, but who has not been authorized, to speak publicly. Quote, "There is little to no appetite for 96 teams, or really even 80. The projected additions is supposed to make the tournament to 72 to 76 teams as compared to the 68. Guys, should the tournament be expanded?
No, I don't think so. plain and simple, no. I mean, 68 is that sacred number. I mean, when you think about March Madness, it's the field of 68.
Yeah.
It's worked for so long, I don't know why we need to change it. I don't see anything that warrants changing, whereas like college football, four is a little bit different than 68 teams with a chance to play for a championship, whereas going to 12, a little bit less severe. 68, that's already a lot of teams. When you've got some of these 14 through 16 seed teams, I know we've had the Fairleigh Dickinsons and UMBCs of the world. When you have some of these teams coming in and just getting blown out and going home, I mean, they play one game and that's it. Who are you going to add? I mean, it's going to be to add any value to that. I know we're going to talk about that in a minute, but what teams are you going to possibly add to this field that's going to make it more entertaining, make it more competitive? I just don't see adding anyone else to put in this tournament that would make it any better. The tournament's already a month as it is, basically. Add on the conference tournaments, it's a month and a half of basketball. So it presents the same issue that people are starting to raise with the college football playoff is, we don't want to play 18 games in a college football season. We don't want to play for two extra months just in the postseason. So for me, between the time it would take, the quality of the games, I just don't see any reason to change it.
Yeah, absolutely not. I think this is the one thing the NCAA has gotten right. I think the field of 68 is just about perfect. You get two games for pretty much a play-in spot, and those teams duke it out, and whoever gets in gets in, and if you don't, you don't. And, I mean, like you said, 68 teams is a ton of opportunities for teams to make their presence known in the league and win their league out if they're in some of these non-Power 5 or, I guess you would call them, Group of 5 mid-major conferences. And if you can't be part of that 68 teams, usually you shouldn't be there in the first place. I know there's a couple teams that you could argue with back and forth, but beyond that, it's not that really much of a difference. And, I mean, the season's long as it is. You're going from November to mid-March. I mean, you got 30 games to prove yourself, and if you haven't figured it out by then you probably won't by the time the tournament comes around.
No, I do not think it should be expanded. I think it's great how it already is. The only avenue I could say I'm okay with expansion, however, is if you turn the first four into like the first eight,
yeah.
And then maybe have all the teams that were kind of the last teams in, they have to play against each other in order to get that like 11 seed, for example. That's the only way I can see this working. Other than that, I don't really know how you add more teams into this without breaking the structure of the tournament. So I'm not a fan of it. However, if they were to add it as, you know, an opportunity for a couple of these next four out teams to be able to get in and play in the first four/first eight, I could understand it. You know, maybe add a couple of games on those, you know, what would it be, Tuesday and Wednesday when they do those first four games. I don't mind that. A couple more basketball games, I don't mind. But I think if they're doing anything more than that, I think it's just silly. Now, from the college basketball administrators' view, their fear that is that if the tourney is left untouched, it will inspire power conference schools to at least consider their own postseason. Fox already is creating a counter to the NIT. So there are more tournaments in the postseason now available or on the horizon to be available. Is this a real threat? I don't think so, because the NIT has been around for 25 years, 30 years.
At least,
yeah. It's been around for a while. There's a big difference between hanging up an NIT banner and a tournament banner.
National championship banner.
Who gives a rip if you're the NIT tournament champion? I mean, you want a Kool-Aid party? I don't know. I don't think it's very – I don't think there's anything to celebrate about that. I think it's saying, all right, we didn't make the tournament, but at least we won something. Okay. The tournament
– it's a participation trophy.
The tournament is the big deal. That's what everyone's trying to make. I don't think teams are going to be, and they very well could be, in this modern day and age where everyone's got to be a winner. I guess they could find a way to mess this thing up and add another tournament or in tournaments to where everyone's a winner. But I think at the bottom line, I think that the main tournament, March Madness, is the one that brings in the viewership, that brings in the people. I'm not watching the NIT unless I've got nothing else to watch on TV. March Madness, you will get me from Thursday at 12 o'clock to Sunday at 12 o'clock
exactly.
At night. I'm not tuning in for the Fox Invitational that way either.
No.
So I don't think it's a real threat. I understand where they are coming from a little bit, but it's not a real threat to me.
Yeah, well, first off, congratulations on being the 69th best team in the country. I don't see why you want to hang a banner for that. Anyway, a real threat to March Madness, no. A threat to happen, yes, I think it is. I mean, we've seen conferences start to explore other postseason options in other sports. I mean, they're talking about it in football right now with the way that some conferences want to start to break away from the NCAA. So, I mean, if something were to happen there, I think it might trigger some conferences, some schools to say, okay, hey, let's do it in basketball too. Might as well. Let's put it all under the same banner if that comes down to it. If they really want to break away from the NCAA, which would be weird in basketball because, again, I think Jace is right. I think this is what they get right. This is one of the things they do right. I think baseball is the same way with their tournament.
Yeah.
But regardless, if they want to do that, I think they could. I think it's a threat to happen for sure, but a threat to March Madness, probably not. Again, I ask, what would this do? I don't, like... What point is there for this? I'm not going to watch this if March Madness is still in existence. Like, if this were to cause such a ripple that we have 35 teams, 40 teams pulling out, well, all of a sudden, you know, your Houstons, your Purdue's, your Tennessee's are all over here playing in this, okay, then maybe. But if March Madness is still there, why would I watch this? I mean, there's no reason to watch this. There's no reason to spend the money to do this, to have the school spend the money to do this. You know, how many? What kind of teams would be in this? Because, I mean, you already have, like this year, for example, let's say Mississippi State misses the tournament. They're going to go to the NIT.
Yeah.
Well, who are you going to have? Like, Vanderbilt? Like, is it going to be like, what, Vanderbilt?
Our coach is about to get fired. Invitational.
Exactly.
Hey, Arkansas will be there.
Michigan and 10 Vanderbilt.
10 games under 500 Invitational? Yeah. What would this do? I don't see the entertainment value. I don't see the value of it.
Yeah, it's not really a threat. It's a threat to the NIT if you want to throw it that way.
There you go.
Just because, I mean, at this point, I don't even think you're taking down the NIT. If you're trying to start this thing up and go against the NIT that's been there for, like you said, William, about 30 years at this point, you're not going to win that battle. For 1 year for it to go off? No, absolutely not. And I think the only thing that's threatening is like conferences doing it. But I mean, they've already got their plans already. Like, I mean, every conference has a conference tournament. Now, what they do beyond that is up to the NCAA for all those teams to make it to the tournament. But again, like we were saying, this is one of the few things that the NCAA has gotten right, and to go out and try and spoil that while you've got it is ridiculous. While you've still got power is ridiculous, because I mean, it's only going to be a trickle effect from the football stuff that we've seen on the campus of UT trickle down to, you know, the biggest money maker, the thing that keeps the lights on for the NCAA. If you're thinking that that's going to go under, I think you're crazy. And to try to combat that with just adding more teams, I think it's ridiculous.
Yeah. So let's play another hypothetical here. Not a hypothetical guy, but I'll allow it. What would be the best scenario if they were to expand it? 72, 76, 96 was thrown out there.
That'd be ridiculous, first of all.
I just think there's a lot of basketball already. I mean, the conference tournaments are this week and next week. And then you've got the big dance. You've got the NIT. I don't think there's a reason to expand this. I think if they were to, I would not mind 72 and allowing, as I presented earlier, four more teams to get in, and you duke it out in the first four, first eight, and do it that style. Really, any other way, I don't see a point.
Yeah, don't was my impulse answer to this. I'll get into some solutions, but best way to do it would be don't. No, if you're going to do it, at least make it teams that are worthy of getting in. Like, no one wants to see another, you know, couple of 15 seeds that just aren't going to be competitive in some of these games. You know, make it a few of the teams that just barely missed the tournament, like those next four out teams, I think would be fine. We already put them up on the bracketology anyway, so why not just go ahead and put them in the tournament at that point if we're going to do that? But do we really want to see, like, again, I hate to throw another straight at Vanderbilt, but Vanderbilt, Missouri, Georgia in the SEC terms in the big dance? I mean, because they just haven't played well enough to make it.
Yeah.
So don't give us teams that don't belong there. And it kind of goes hand in hand with don't overdo it. 96 is ridiculous. That number is – I can't even fathom a tournament with 96 teams.
That's a quarter of the NCAA right there. That's a quarter of Division I. You want all those 25%. Teams in there?
Yeah. That's too much. Take a small step first. Go to 72. If it works and you want to do 76, okay, then that'll be, you know, another baby step. But 96 is insane. Anything close to that is insane. Let's just – if we're going to do it, keep it small and go from there and try to keep the schedule a little bit condensed because – I mean, look, I'm with you. Every time March Madness is on, that's all I'm watching for a month, and that's fair. But don't expand it way longer than that because it's going to start to lose its luster, I feel like, the longer we go into this.
I think if you're going to change it, like y'all have said, keep it minimal. 72 is about where I tap out at my interest of any teams being in, because usually those first four out, you can make a case. But beyond that, I mean, it starts getting ugly real quick. So giving those other teams maybe a chance there that usually wouldn't be in, sure, yeah, turn it to four games of a win and end sort of, you know, you may get to the 64, there you go, and then you're off and running with the tournament. I think that's about as far as you need to go. Again, right now what they have, it's just about perfect. Usually you get some good matchups from the way that you've got it right now. The teams that are supposed to be there are supposed to be there, and they duke it out from then on out. So, you know, if you're going to expand it, keep it minimal, especially if you're wanting to do it later on anyways. Keep it minimal, test things out, figure out what you're comfortable with. But like you said, 96 is such a stretch this early. Whenever, you know, this tournament's been a thing and been in this format for so long, to go and add what would that be, like 32 more teams? That'd be absolutely ridiculous.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. All right, we're going to take a break from the hardwood, head over to the gridiron when we come back on Overtime. Broncos Country's last ride, Russell Wilson. We'll be back.
Ever been the coach who realized the team's gear just wasn't up to par? Well, if I'm being honest, that was me. Just a downright irresponsible and plain bad coach. Then SM Athletics changed the game. I want you to picture this. I walk into their store, a coach with a vision. SM Athletics didn't just see a coach. They saw a team's potential. And they delivered custom uniforms so striking. Our team's spirit soared. From cutting-edge apparel to top-notch equipment, SM Athletics transformed our presence. No more unreliable online orders or envying the other team's style. SM Athletics stands for quality, design, and on-time delivery every time. Coaches, elevate your team with SM Athletics. Call 865-966-3434 or visit smathletics.com. Get the best for your team, delivered right and on time. So, elevate your team's game by contacting SM Athletics today.
Are you in need of a smile makeover? Hi, I'm Dr. Michael Costa at Knoxville Smiles. And if you're ready to improve your smile, replace teeth that are missing, make your dentures tighter, add implants to your mouth, whatever you may need, we're here to discuss a wide range of easy, pain-free cosmetic and restorative procedures that can create a glowing, radiant smile that you've always dreamed of. Don't wait any longer. The time is now. Call us today at Knoxville Smiles and schedule your appointment at 865-539-1776 or go online to KnoxvilleSmiles.com.
Hey guys, it's Logan Quinton from the 920 Podcast and Fan Run Varsity Spotlight. Yes, it's the Cookie Man, and I'm here to tell you about something sweet. Crumbled Cookies is the fastest growing cookie company in the nation. After only 4 years, 500 plus stores are in operation in 50 states, with many more in build out. Just a reminder to go see the Crumbled crew at Parkside Drive or Clinton Highway. And please, come check out the new location in Maryville, 1765 West Broadway, Suite C.
The superbly versatile all-electric EQB from Mercedes-Benz, a compact SUV that's full of big surprises. An optional fold-out third row offers luxurious comfort for up to 7 occupants. And almost 24 cubic feet of cargo space means this compact SUV is big enough to handle anything you can throw at it or in it. You can set the tone any way you like, with 64 color customizable ambient lighting throughout. And just like every other Mercedes-Benz EV, the EQB features the very latest generation MBUX voice activated tech. So whether you want to set a new destination, change the tunes, or tune up the heat, all you have to say is, "Hey Mercedes, this vehicle's all electric, the feeling's all Mercedes." Test drive the EQB today at your local dealer or learn more at mbusa.com/EQB. That's mbusa.com/EQB.
eBay Motors here for the ride. Elbow grease and a whole lot of love transformed 100,000 miles and a body full of rust into a drive entirely its own. LED headlights, spoilers, whatever you need. eBay Motors has it all at affordable prices. And with eBay Guaranteed Fit, it's guaranteed to fit your ride every time. With all the parts you need at the prices you want, it's easy to bring home the win. Keep your ride or die alive at ebaymotors.com. Eligible items only. Exclusions apply.
Hey. Lil CC on that beat. Yeah, yeah. I mean, where the f- should I really even start? I got...
Back here on Overtime, this is some good tunes from Drake as we come back in. You know what, one good, the Broncos and Russell Wilson relationship, as it ended yesterday. The Denver Broncos notified quarterback Russell Wilson on Monday that he will be released March 14th at the start of the new league year, ending his tenure with the team only 2 years after a blockbuster trade to acquire the veteran was made. Wilson, who turns 35 this year, was benched during the final two games of the 2023 season, which Denver finished with a 8-9 record, opening the door for Monday's move. The Broncos acquired the 9-time Pro Bowl quarterback in a massive trade with the Seattle Seahawks in March of 2022, in which the Broncos gave up 5 draft picks, including 2 first-rounders and 3 players in exchange for Wilson and a 4th-round pick. Denver won only 11 of the 30 games that Wilson started. The timing of this is particularly important because the release was partially dictated by a trigger in his contract that guarantees that $37 million, which he's on the books for in 2025, he would still be paid if he were on the roster up until March 17th. In cutting Wilson, the Broncos are on the hook for $85 million in dead money as the result of future guarantees accelerating onto the 2024 cap. The team could split those charges over two seasons via a post-June 1st release designation. We talked a little bit about this yesterday, right before we went off the air, but I wanted to make sure we got it into a whole segment. I'll give my takeaways first. You know when you go to a fast food place or like a Chipotle, and like it happened to be 2 days ago, I was really, really hungry, went to Chipotle, got double rice, double steak, veggies, double cheese, guacamole. It looked so good. I was so hungry. It looks great, right? The more you say it and think about it, it sounds great. But then when you sit down and start eating it, you're like, damn, that's, you know, I probably didn't eat all that food, right? It's like, it was good. I wanted it, but I didn't eat all that food. That's very similar to this Russell Wilson trade. It sounded very, very good. Russell Wilson heads to the Denver Broncos, gets a chance to contend in the AFC, after kind of stalling out with Seattle. It sounds very, very good. Russell Wilson for, you know, a bunch of scrubs and Drew Lock and Noah Fant was a good piece, but some draft picks. It'll pay off for the Broncos long term because they'll be contending for championships anyway. It sounds a lot better than it actually is, and that's what this trade was. I think this will go down as one of the worst trades in NFL history, and this was a I don't know if it was a rushed move by Russell Wilson figuring that he needed to go find a different place to be successful. But when the trade happened, I said that Seattle was a better spot and a better destination than Denver. I'm not saying that he could not have found a better spot to go to if he wanted to be traded. But Denver, when I looked at it, Seattle had the better defense. Seattle had the better weapons. Seattle had the better coach. Seattle had the better franchise. I didn't see how this was going to fit. I didn't think it was going to work. It did not work. It took 2 years, really a year, to figure out it wasn't working. Sean Payton comes in, who's had success with multiple different quarterbacks, multiple different people. He can't have success with Russell Wilson. Basically turned into a dumbed-down game manager this year, completing passes for 5 and 7 yards consistently. Not the same player he once was. I never thought this was going to work. It did not work. It sounded a lot better than it actually was.
Yeah, it didn't work. Not surprising at all that this just kind of backfired on him. It felt inevitable. I thought, really, they probably could have gotten rid of him last year because last year it didn't work at all. They tried to just retool and bring in Sean Payton, and it just feel like they delayed what was eventually going to happen anyway. And that was just that, I mean, they were going to eventually either release him, trade him, you know, get rid of him somehow, and that this was going to fail. They've plateaued as a team. In fact, they almost got worse last year than they were before. It just has not worked at all. I didn't see where this was a good idea a couple years ago either, especially for what they gave up. I did not like that at all for Denver, and it's seriously backfired now because if you look at Seattle, I mean, look at where some of these picks have gone. Look at the team they've assembled now that has a brand-new coach and is ready to win. And when you look at it that way, not a great experience for Russell Wilson in Denver. Now, I'm kind of surprised they did it this way. I'm surprised they didn't at least explore any options to try to avoid getting this $85 million cap hit. Now, I know it's over 2 years, but I mean, it's $40 million a year. It's a lot. It's a big cap hit for a guy that's not going to be on your roster. Mm-hmm. So I'm surprised they didn't at least explore that, and they just said, oh, we're just going to sign on the dotted line, and you can pack your bags and get out of town.
Yeah.
I'm a little bit surprised. So it hurts them financially, and they're not any better as a football team.
Yeah, it was, like you said, it was bound to happen anyways, just with the production they were getting out of them, not what they were signing up for whenever they decided to trade for this. I think in his, release letter that he posted on, Twitter and stuff was, it was very – telltale of kind of what was going on. I mean, he thanked pretty much everybody in the organization, whether it be players, other staff members that weren't coaches, and he didn't say a word about ownership or the coaches. I think that hints at some, you know, obvious dysfunction, as we've been hitting on, something that really didn't hit from the jump, and something that rolled over to this year, and it turned out to be, you know, not the right thing here, you know. But with that, you know, Denver's got a fairly early pick this year. You know, maybe can grab a quarterback there, maybe find your guy to roll into the future with, sort of rebuild from the spot that you're in right now. I feel like that could be a way out of it. And as of right now, for Russ in the near future, I mean, do we really see this guy playing anywhere next year?
Well, you allude into my next question. Odds makers have favored the Pittsburgh Steelers, Las Vegas Raiders, and Atlanta Falcons as Wilson's next possible destinations. But there are reasons to question whether Wilson projects as the primary starter in all of those spots. We'll begin with Atlanta. I don't think that's a natural fit for him. Wilson doesn't like throwing down the middle of the field. Sean McVay likes to throw in the middle of the field, and you think that Raheem Morris coming over from Los Angeles and Zach Robinson coming over with them are going to try and practice a lot of the same stuff McVay does. I don't see how that works out. Pittsburgh's an interesting destination. Arthur Smith is kind of a clown himself. I do like the weapons you have, and I do like the culture. I think that's a better situation than Denver is. But are they really going to add Russell Wilson to try and replace Kenny Pickett, who they're still trying to figure out if he works? I think that this is going to be his season to prove if he works in the league or not. I don't think adding a 35-year-old Russell Wilson is going to help him out at all. Las Vegas is an interesting one because I don't think Aiden O'Connell is the long-term option. But Antonio Pierce, the head coach of the Raiders, said just last week at the Combine, we don't want any more, quote, band-aids at quarterback. Russell Wilson would be just that.
Yep.
So I don't know where he goes. I really don't. I don't think he's a starter in this league. And I hate to be blunt, but I don't think he's a starter in this league. So I really would not be surprised if he's not on a roster as a starter. And I really wouldn't be that surprised if he went on a roster, period. Because I don't think he wants to take a step back and be a backup somewhere. Mm. I think he's too good for that, too big in his head for that. I very well think this could be the end of his career.
Yeah, I'll run down the destinations the same. Atlanta still, to me, and the common option here is they all three, I think, have too many options left before they'd have to go look at Russell Wilson. For Atlanta, we still don't know what the whole situation is around Justin Fields. I know that's probably the number one landing spot for him at this point. If the Bears do decide to move on, that would be where I would slate him to go, would be Atlanta. Hometown kid, good system for him. And so with that option still on the table, I don't know why you'd look at Russell Wilson before that. They also may look at Kirk Cousins in the offseason, possibly, as, again, not as much of a Band-Aid as Russell Wilson. Might still be one to a degree, but, you know, a little bit more trusted option there for them. So Atlanta, again, too many options. For Pittsburgh, again, a possible spot for Fields. I've seen this over the last few weeks that they've wanted to explore bringing him in possibly. I don't really see it. I don't see them moving away from Pickett or Rudolph this early. I don't see them going from that. They even could draft, I think, before they look at Russell Wilson. So I think they stick with their guys next year. No reason to go sign a guy that's going to cost you a bunch of money, and he might not even take you to any new heights at all. Vegas is probably the most interesting one, considering that they have the biggest Band-Aid right now at quarterback and Aiden O'Connell. But they're in position to draft one. I think they're drafting where they slated right now, 7th, I think. 6th, 7th, somewhere in there, but they're slated to trade up most likely and get one of these top-tier quarterbacks. So, again, why would you go get Russell Wilson? You just might as well get younger at this point. Just go draft one, get younger, and go from there and make that your option. Beyond those three, the only teams I found that even might be a consideration would be Minnesota if they lose Kirk Cousins and Tampa Bay if they lose Baker Mayfield, but I think they're going to keep Baker Mayfield. So I don't think that's Minnesota would be a consideration maybe, but again, what is that going to do for you?
Yeah, I don't really see him slotting in very well anywhere. Like you said, I mean, these are teams that they're wanting to get a younger guy that they can build around rather than an old guy that'll sit in there for a couple years and maybe work with them. I mean, that's what Denver tried to do, and it didn't work. You can't rebuild around Russell Wilson this late in his career as a 35-year-old. You could do that with a couple other guys. Like, you could do that with Aaron Rodgers. You could do that with Tom Brady. You can't do that with Russell Wilson after what we've seen from him these last couple years. So I don't see him finding a destination in any of Las Vegas, Pittsburgh, or Atlanta, especially, like you said, with Justin Fields still trying to figure out what we're doing there in Chicago. And like you said, William, I don't see him wanting to be a backup anywhere either. So I think his head's too big. I think he thinks he's better than he is, sort of like a Cam Newton almost in that regard. I'm going to agree with you. I really don't see him on a roster this upcoming season.
Let me say this real quick, too. I think Russell Wilson, the guy, is very likable. I like him. I think he's a good family man and a good dude. However, when it comes to how he's handled on a team, I think it rubs a lot of people the wrong way, and it did in Denver. Now let's kind of take a step back here and look at the legacy of Russell Wilson, how this affects him. I think it's taken big hits. 50 coaches and executives unanimously voted him into the NFL's top tier of quarterbacks in 2020. He got 40 of the 50 voters, placed him there a year later. Wilson has subsequently plummeted into tier three now, the same tier as the Daniel Joneses of the world and guys that aren't going to be around much longer. His production has been declining even before they traded him to Denver in March of 2022. This will make you feel old. His teams haven't reached the championship round of the postseason since 2014. The way Wilson departed Seattle, at one point asking ownership to fire his coach and general manager, did not help. Does this kind of ending, if this is the end for Wilson, is this ending chapter going to adjust the way you reflect and look back on his legacy?
I think it probably does compared to where it would have been in 2014, 2015 when he was in Seattle and they were still winning ball games and they were still winning Super Bowls or getting to the Super Bowl. They haven't been back. You said it. They haven't been back. I mean, it's the most success he had was in those first few years in Seattle in 2013, 2014, winning a title, getting back the next year. That's as far as he's gotten since then. And now the messy exit, now the rapid decline in Denver and just the dysfunctional experiment that the Broncos have been, I think it can alter the way that he's going to be looked at. He's a Super Bowl champion, yeah, but a lot of quarterbacks are Super Bowl champions. Nick Foles is a Super Bowl champion in 2018. So they're on the same plane in terms of legacy at that point. So I do think that it alters it a little bit. In terms of talent, I mean, he'll be remembered as one of the more memorable quarterbacks, at least the last two decades, in terms of just pure talent. When he got to the league, some of the plays that he was able to make, some of those Seattle teams were really good, and he looked good on them and helped lead them to a championship. But it feels forced at this point, I think, in his career. And I even wrote down here at the bottom the same thing you guys have already said, and that's, could he consider retirement? I mean, how long do you want to stretch this out before you realize that your legacy's taking a big hit?
Yeah, I think his stint in Denver does put a scratch in his little resume that he's built up. Like you said, his early years were his best, and that's when he was surrounded by some better tools than he has been these last couple years. But, I think if you take it from two different sides here, with one being Seattle, one being Denver, I think his legacy is cemented in Seattle. I think he's one of their all-time greats, just from what he was able to do with them. I think he's going to be a Seahawks Hall of Famer, not a league Hall of Famer, but just a Seahawks Hall of Famer in that regard, just from what he was able to bring to that city. But Denver takes him down the notch of being one of the top quarterbacks of our generation to one that might be towards just like an upper level one rather than the upper echelon group of guys up there. So I think it does tarnish it a little bit. I don't think it ruins it per se, but just not what how you want to go out if you're Russell Wilson.
Yeah, I think the passage of time will assist Wilson in his legacy. Now, recency bias is a killer in all sports. I mean, the takes you see from people when one player is you know, not in the playoffs, or you know, like Steph Curry when they missed the playoffs in 2021, when they missed the playoffs. You know, Steph Curry's washed, this team's done, they'll never win anything else again. And then the next season they turn around and win the championship. Recency bias is a killer in sports, and I think it's killing Wilson right now. That isn't to say that later on we look at what Russell Wilson a little bit differently. I think that he could be a Hall of Famer, and when you look back at his entirety of his career, but recently, right now, it's hard to believe that he would be one, considering what we've seen from him as of late. Again, I think he's a really good dude. I think during his prime, he was a really good player. I mean, obviously, it's hard for anyone to get to a Super Bowl, let alone back-to-back Super Bowls, and be the best quarterback on the field for both of them. At the same time, however, I just have a hard time seeing how this does not affect him, at least in the recent – or I guess in the next couple of years when people think about this guy. But who knows? Maybe on later on, it just kind of swept under the rug. Oh, there's at the end of his career, you can't hold it against him. But I think his decisions he makes going forward could affect that, though. If he continues to try and draw this thing out and continue playing and it continues to not work, that's where, you know, at the end of your career, you're like, okay, was that guy really that good? So it'll be interesting. But look, I mean, Shaquille O'Neal, though, I mean, towards the end of his career, he was dragging that thing out.
Yeah.
And he wasn't great. And we don't look at that as a indictment, other than
right.
The memes you get now.
Celtic,
you know,
Shaq.
Celtic Shaq, you know. But it's just part of, you know, basketball careers, pro careers, athletic careers. You have a peak, and then you slowly begin to decline. It's a part of it. But this has been a rocky going for Russell Wilson as of late. All right, when we come back to round out this episode of Overtime, we'll talk about Saquon, the move. We'll talk about it coming back from the break.
Are you ready to play hard and work harder? Are you looking to take the next step in your career with a company who celebrates hard work and appreciates those who do it? Then it's time to join the movement at Axel Logistics. Axel is looking to expand their award-winning sales team with logistics consultants who are outgoing, ambitious, and thrive in a fast-paced environment. If that sounds like you, visit axellogistics.com to learn more. Make sure you tell them you heard about it on Fan Run Radio. Axel Logistics, now is your time.
I was afraid to cut the cord, but once I did, I couldn't believe it took so long to do it. Paying too much for my cable bill had become a bad habit. I either wasn't getting what I wanted or never knew where to find any of my favorite shows until it was too late. Plus, the prices just kept going up. Thankfully, I discovered a new way to watch called Philo. For just $25 a month, I can catch all my favorite shows on networks like BET, MTV, and TLC. It even has Nickelodeon for my kids. I can watch anytime I want, anywhere I want. Plus, Philo lets me have up to 3 streams at once, so everyone can watch what they want at the same time. Throw in the unlimited DVR that saves all my favorites for up to a year, and this really is the best deal in TV. I just wish I hadn't waited so long. Sound too good to be true? Well, try it out for yourself, and you'll see why people who love TV love Philo. Go to philo.tv.
Life is more fun with a Good Life checking account, offering extra benefits including bank travel. Join us for a trip to Mackinac Island for a stay at the beautiful Grand Hotel. Travel with us to southern Utah to witness the enormous, colorful, and unusual rock formations. Or join us on one of our many day trips. We're always on the go.
Citizens National Bank. Banking never felt so good.
Member FDIC.
Atlanta Braves spring training is on, and the road to a 7th straight division crown starts in Northport.
Acuna hits a high drive to left. They might have just gone deep again. That thing is out of here.
We'll have live coverage, interviews with Braves coaches and players, and Grapefruit League action live every weekend leading up to opening day. Atlanta Braves spring training is only live right here.
Fox Sports Knoxville, Fan Run Radio.
Thank you. Back here on Overtime, rounding out a Tuesday afternoon. Many people think it's wicked that the Giants are moving on from Saquon Barkley. I myself included, let's dive into it and what I'm calling Saquon the Move. A couple of nice puns there, right?
Dang, back to
rolling
back.
Today. Rolling today.
The New York Giants aren't placing the franchise tag on Pro Bowl running back Saquon Barkley, a league source said. This will allow Barkley to test free agency. And beginning next week, if a deal is not struck with the Giants by then, Barkley, who's 27, rushed for 962 yards and 6 touchdowns last season, along with 41 receptions for 280 yards and 4 touchdowns in 14 games. Important to note, Barkley suffered a high ankle sprain early last season, wasn't able to match his bounce-back 2022 campaign, where he rushed for 1,312 yards and 10 touchdowns. Even with the injury, the running back has been a huge component of the Brian Daboll offense. The Giants are not very good because of Daniel Jones. The only bright light was Saquon Barkley. I don't think this is a good move for them. I know running backs, their value in the NFL is not great anymore, but what you have at quarterback and Daniel Jones is not good at all. So I think you would try to keep him along as long as you're still testing out Daniel Jones. And I think this is Daniel Jones' last shot to stay around in this league. I would at least give him a running back in Saquon that he can lean on. But I could also see the other side. Well, if he's nothing without Saquon, then what really is he? So I understand it. I don't think this is a good move by the Giants, however. We'll dive into who they have left on the roster at running back, and it's thin. I just don't think this is a good move, Dawson.
No, I agree. I don't think this is good either. I don't think you're at the point with him yet where it's worth letting him walk and go somewhere else. I feel like you could have gotten some more run out of him, at least for the next year or two. And especially, like you said, when he's the only bright spot in an offense, why are you going to let him walk? And then now you have no bright spots in the offense. I don't get it. I don't understand. Like you said, running backs are not what they used to be value-wise, so why give up one that's provided you so much value? It makes no sense unless you're going to draft one, I guess, which good week for the running backs at the combine, to be fair. Several running backs have made their case to be a high-round pick, our own Jalen Wright included, as well as Isaac Garrido of Illinois, I think, made a very good statement to be one of the top running backs drafted. So unless you're going to go that route and draft, I don't see why it's a good move.
Yeah, for production-wise, I think it's horrible just because, like you said, this is the star of your offense, and Daniel Jones, who you just paid a boatload of money to, is not your guy. I don't get why they threw him like 45 or so million bucks a year just to go out there and lose games for you. I wasn't a big fan of that. Saquon's a guy that can do everything. He's one of the more versatile backs. He can catch, he can run, he can do whatever you need him to do. But, you know, like you said, the running backs have become pretty disposable. You don't need a big-name running back. I mean, you take Kansas City. They've got Isaiah Pacheco, a seventh-round pick or undrafted guy. I can't remember which one, but they go out and win back-to-back Super Bowls with him. So, I mean, it's one of those disposable positions now. I think more about it, you know, money-wise, I think it's not a horrible decision, but from the production you're getting out of everybody else, it's not worth it.
Real quick, important to note, even with the ankle sprain, Barkley accounted for 65% of the offensive snaps this season. They have Matt Breda, who's 29 on the roster. He played 26% of snaps, averaging 2.7 yards per carry on 55 attempts. He's also slated for free agency. Tennessee fans will remember this name, Eric Gray. The Giants drafted him last year in the fifth round. Did not get much run last season. Tallied just 17 attempts for 48 yards, which is also 2.7 yards per attempt. Not very efficient. The Giants would be ready to hand the backfield to Gray. It's hard to believe that. If you want to draft a running back, go ahead and do it. But I think this team has a lot of problems other than running back in the draft to solve. If I'm the Giants, I'm keeping what I know works and trying to add pieces, A, to my offensive line that was terrible last year, and B, weapons on the receiving end to go alongside Jalen Hyatt to at least try to give this offense some juice. I think they should try and make an effort to sign Barkley. If Barkley and the Giants do not come together, I think an intriguing option for Barkley is the Cowboys. The Cowboys are a team that are going to move on from Tony Pollard. Rico Dattle, their backup, I don't think is a long-term option there. Can you imagine that team with Saquon Barkley?
Kind of nasty.
That'd be a good group.
They've got the money to do it,
too. I'd also propose Derrick Henry to the Cowboys as well, yes, as an option. And I know the Cowboys are like the Lakers. Someone comes up in free agency, everyone already has the jersey swaps ready to go.
Yeah.
But I do think Barkley would be a good option for them if he decides to move on, which would be a big loss for the Giants considering they're losing him to a team in their own division. Yeah. Now, I'm not saying it's going to happen, but
Philadelphia.
Yeah.
I think would be an option for him as well. Again, a team that maybe doesn't have quite as much of a long-term option. I had also looked in Detroit, possibly, if they decide that Swift maybe is not a long-term guy, and they decide to go Gibbs and Barkley.
Well, Swift is in
Swift is in Philadelphia now, right? So
Montgomery,
that's not a long-term guy in Detroit, you think, right?
Well, you got Jamar Gibbs, though.
Yeah, so you go Barkley and Gibbs, those two together in the backfield as a change of pace?
I was tossing over Minnesota, maybe.
Minnesota,
I mean, we saw the drop-off because Dalvin Cook, of course, left.
Yeah.
And you were stuck with Alexander Mattison, who was pretty much nothing
and
back there.
Yeah. They just released him, too.
There you go.
Yes, exactly. So, I mean, you've got a little bit of money. You can, you know, maybe wager with Kirk Cousins, see if you can bring him back, too, and you might have a little bit of a team there.
Yeah. Or send him to Jacksonville with the best quarterback in the league.
You guys have a running back already.
All right, that's going to wrap it up here on Overtime. We appreciate you listening along with us. Tomorrow we'll break down the Vols matchup with South Carolina on a big Wednesday. We'll see you tomorrow.